Manage family and personal life to the next level.
Weekdays at noon on Ave Maria Radio.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
D.L. Hudson. Welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us. First guest is a good friend and a very well-educated and experienced expert in education, the law, and even in politics. His name is Manny Miranda. Welcome to Church and Culture, Manny.
Thank you very much, Deal, and hello to all your listeners.
There you go. He is presently a principal of statecraft, where he brings his 30 years of experience to bear on infrastructure growth of all kinds in the developing world. And one of his most interesting experiences was being in Iraq during the surge, 2006-2008. He was director of the Office of Legislative Statecraft. Now, my understanding is, Manny, that you were helping them write the Iraqi constitution, and you were actually advising the prime minister, right?
We were. I was advising the prime minister's office on legal issues after the Constitution was written, in the drafting of enabling legislation that came from the Constitution.
Well, you and I were in touch both before and after that trip to Iraq. I'm glad you got back in one piece. But what we're going to talk to Manny about today is something that he's done ever since I met him, which is now, I think, 20 years ago. He is and has been involved in the issue of Catholic education, Catholic identity of colleges and universities, using the standard of ex corde ecclesiae. In fact, he was the first president of the Cardinal Newman Society, which their mission is to educate Catholics and inspect Catholic institutions according to ex corde. But in this case, Manny has joined forces with the well-known writer, movie producer Bill Blatty, wrote The Exorcist in 1960, and then the movie came out, in asking for a ruling on the Catholic identity of his alma mater and Blatty's alma mater, Georgetown University. And Manny, is this the first time this kind of thing has been done with a Catholic institution?
Well, actually, it isn't. I was part of the first time that it's been done, 1991-1992. I wrote a petition that went all the way to John Paul II, and it was with regard to Georgetown University's funding of a pro-abortion advocacy student club. And
what year was that, Manny?
That was 1991. And
right.
Cardinal Hickey, the Archbishop of Washington at the time, immediately issued a statement that this was inconsistent with Georgetown's Catholic identity. But it was months before ex corde ecclesia went into effect. And so this was a real test case. So I was the first person out the gate to apply ex corde to the facts. And the matter went all the way to the Vatican and ended with a good result. Georgetown was required to reverse its decision, and all in about 9 months of effort, which was a pretty good result from the church. The only other instance where something like this has happened that I know of is very recently the University of San Diego alumni issued or submitted a petition directly to the Vatican And I did consult with them slightly, and they didn't quite follow my advice. And the Vatican ruled that they had no standing. And that happened about 2 weeks ago, that their petition was basically thrown out.
That the, in other words, the group of alumni who made the petition, they were not recognized as having standing and authority to offer that petition?
Correct. I haven't seen the petition, but I do know that they did not take the important step of having students and faculty involved in the petition. And that was something I had advised them on and warned them about. And sure enough, it was decided that they had no standing. That is not true with our petition.
Well, talk about this. Now, like I've already said, and perhaps some of our listeners know, you, Manny Miranda, have been involved in a struggle with Georgetown, your alma mater, for a long time. But now you have decided to really do what canon law allows you to do in a case like this. Could you tell our listeners a little about that?
Sure. Well, you know, a lot of us out there, a lot of alumni, a lot of Catholics, spend a great deal of time writing letters, sometimes angry letters. Sometimes they get angrier and angrier. And I've met many alumni who have whole boxes full of letters that they've written complaining and asking for letters to be published in the student magazine or the alumni magazine. And I've never participated in that sort of thing because I find that it just doesn't really help or get us anywhere. I've dedicated myself to very tactical efforts, sometimes supporting students, for example, putting crucifixes back in the classrooms. That was very successful and became a national effort. And all kinds of advocacy activity of a very tactical nature. And I think that alumni joined with students, joined with faculty, perhaps funded and pursuing a tactical approach can be have an enormous impact on our Catholic colleges and universities. Now, in this instance, this is sort of the last effort that one could undertake, which is to bring a canon law procedure, a canon law case, to cause your university to actually pay attention, to have the Vatican step in. In the case of Georgetown, it's unique, but this would apply to all the universities equally. Georgetown happens to be a pontifical university. It's listed as a pontifical university. It, in other words, draws a charter from the Pope himself. But all the Catholic universities in the United States are subject to the Apostolic Constitution, Ex Corde Ecclesia. And so on that basis, we were able to frame a complaint that outlined the various violations that Georgetown has exhibited over the last 20 years. And so we very carefully went through newspapers, magazines, letters, and documented the various violations. 20 years of sticking their finger in the eyes of the church. 20 years of ignoring the dictates of the local bishop. 20 years of upsetting grandparents and parents and students themselves who have voiced how concerned they are and how uncomfortable they, as Catholic men and Catholic young women, are made every day, even in the classrooms, for being Catholic at Georgetown University. And it is really an astounding story that we have told. And so, Dio, I am glad to break news on your show.
Please do. You've gotten some good news from the Vatican, I understand.
Exactly right. And we were waiting for it. They have followed their own procedural rules in terms of timing. They were perhaps a week or two late, but we received a letter from the Vatican just on Saturday telling us that they had ruled that our petition established a, quote, well-grounded complaint, and that, end quote, and that they were now taking the matter, quote, seriously and were pursuing curative actions with regard to Georgetown University. This is a groundbreaking event because there were many, especially among faculty who faculty at Catholic colleges, scholars, and many alumni who had really given up on ex corde ecclesia, who thought of it as something that was part of the 90s and dormant. And so this is a very significant development. It conveys to the U.S. bishops that they have been asleep at the wheel. It conveys to Catholic faculty all over the country that they can now muster their forces and their intellect. And, of course, it awakens alumni, parents, students at 235 Catholic colleges to do something about what they encounter sometimes on a day-to-day basis.
Now, when you got that letter, and this was from which consistory?
It was from the Congregation for Catholic Education, which is one of the dicasteries to which we submitted a petition. And I met with them in July. I went to Rome, and I met with them and with others and in Rome. And so we were hopeful, but of course you never know. And at the end of the day, you know, you're dealing with a bureaucracy, and you're dealing with, you know, a bureaucracy that perhaps doesn't want to stir the boat. But we have a new pope, that some of us have, you know, continue to have questions about, but tremendous hope in. And this pope is not like the last pope, who was a university professor. But Pope Francis, people don't realize, was the chancellor of the Catholic University of Argentina, and was the chairman of the Episcopal Conference of Bishops that was among the first.
And he was a professor himself.
He had been, of course, a teacher and is a Jesuit and was a professor, of course, but he was also the chairman of the Episcopal Conference that implemented ex corde ecclesia in Argentina. And finally, when the Pope Benedict issued a decree to declare the University of Lima no longer entitled to call itself Catholic and pontifical, the Cardinal Archbishop of Lima first conferred with all of his fellow cardinals in Latin America and got their approval for the request. And Cardinal Bergoglio, now Pope Francis, conferred with the Archbishop of Lima and agreed that that was a viable and correct recourse. So
I'm talking. Let me remind our listeners that I'm talking with Manny Miranda, who is an attorney, but also a diplomat and someone who has worked around the world helping developing nations develop. But he is involved now for several years in a canon law action against Georgetown University. And isn't the outcome that you're looking for is for someone in authority, proper authority, to determine whether or not Georgetown is Catholic or not?
Well, that is one of the things that one of the items of recourse that we requested was to, as a last result, make that determination. Now, we are still, it is still possible that that could be an outcome. What I believe the Vatican is going to do now is to find curative action, remedial action, and I think that they're first going to look to the Society of Jesus. The Jesuits, we have argued, are still in control. They are still the fiduciary. They are still entrusted with Georgetown, because Georgetown, and really this is true of most of the Catholic colleges and universities, Georgetown University is church property. Now, they may argue that that's not true. They have all kinds of reasons why they think that that's not the case. But the Vatican has held consistently that all of these universities are still ecclesiastical property, and that they have been entrusted, this property has been entrusted, to particular orders, in this case, the Society of Jesus. So I believe the Vatican will now first look to the Society of Jesus for curative action, but we are still holding them to the final determination, which John Paul II His Holiness actually stated for us in Veritatis Splendor that a bishop, if he has to, or the church, if it has to, must declare an institution that is no longer acting as a Catholic institution. It must declare it no longer Catholic. And that is a recourse of final resort, and that is something that we will continue to hold them to consider.
What kind of action you talk about? Did you use the word curative?
Yes, curative.
What would they actually ask the Jesuits to do internally?
Well, one thing that they have already asked the University of St. Louis to do, St. Louis University many years ago made the argument that it was no longer owned by the church and controlled by the Society of Jesus. And the Vatican issued a very clear statement that that was not the case, and whatever they thought they had done legally to spin off the university to a lay board had no impact at all on the ecclesiastical nature of the property. And so the Vatican told St. Louis and the Jesuits to reorganize themselves legally to make it very clear that the lay board was answerable to the Society of Jesus and its local province, the Missouri province. And so that is certainly one step on a legal basis. Another step is to require Georgetown to incorporate Ex Corde Ecclesia into its bylaws. And that's a very significant step. Now, non-lawyers may say, oh, well, who cares? Well, no, actually, if a professor is being harassed at Georgetown, which has been the case, for teaching in the classroom the values of marriage, for example, or teaching in the classroom the nature of sexually aberrant behavior, they have been repressed, in essence. Grievance procedures have begun against them. They have been harassed at times for years, shunned by colleagues, classes removed, teachers' assistants removed from them, all kinds of things. And so Ex Corde Ecclesia being made part of the bylaws creates legal rights to protect the academic freedom of who? Of the Catholic professors. The irony is that when Ex Corde came out 20-some years ago, almost 25 years ago, there was a clamor that it would impact negatively on academic freedom. The irony is that 25 years later, Ex Corde Ecclesia is the legal protection needed for Catholic teachers to have their academic freedom.
I'm talking with Manny Miranda about his work, I think prompted by also his good friend Bill Blatty, the author of The Exorcist, in appealing to the Vatican to do something about the lack of Catholic identity at Georgetown University, which is a very prestigious university and, I think, a good one from the point of view of overall education. Tell them a little bit about the research that you compiled about Georgetown in preparation for this petition.
Well, we spent I'll correct you. We've actually been at this officially. We filed with the Archbishop in July. And so we filed with the Vatican in September. So this is actually a very good response in very timely fashion. So, you know, for anybody out there who might be interested in doing something like this, it isn't a matter of years, but it does take research. And I spent the year before we filed doing a great deal of research, accumulating files, some of them current articles that I collected from newspapers at Georgetown that speak about orgies, that speak about all kinds of sexual behavior that Georgetown apparently is condoning and knows about and is condoning and is actually being written about in school-funded newspapers.
You did interviews with students, too, didn't you?
Certainly. We had interviews with students. I interviewed faculty. We collected a significant amount of information about current programs at Georgetown. We commissioned a researcher to basically scour everything having to do with Georgetown and the academic policy and so on. So we did an enormous amount of research. We really prepared our brief. The brief itself in support of the petition was about 10 pages, but the brief in support of the petition was almost 200 pages. And we went into the history. We did a great deal of research about the source of Georgetown's Catholic identity. That is to say, how the property itself was acquired. These are Catholic families who gave property so that a college could be built here in Washington. And Catholic families that continued for years to fund. So this is a university that is not only a ecclesiastical property. In the case of Georgetown, the proto Catholic university, the first Catholic university in the United States, it was a university upon which all of the dreams of the Catholic faith was vested for many, many years, and continues to be to some extent a symbol of the Catholic faith in higher education. And so there is a great history there. And we went through it all. We established the legal rights, that is to say, the title rights, who owns what and who gave what, and how Georgetown became a pontifical university. All of these things were established. And then we also documented, through student testimony and student articles written over 20 years, basically 20 years of Georgetown history of scandals. And scandals to the faithful. And so, yes, a lot of work went into it, and apparently the Vatican believes now that we have established a well-grounded complaint.
Well, congratulations. I'm talking with Manny Miranda, who is attorney and also knows a lot about canon law and a lot about Catholic education, about his petition, which has been accepted by the Vatican, about Georgetown University. And once this news gets out, and of course I'll help, I think it may. Do you think it'll shake up some of the other Catholic institutions who have always stood by and quoted Land of Lakes as a defense?
I do think that. I do think that. And that is what happened, in fact, last time around. In 1992, when Georgetown was forced to defund the pro-abortion club, six other Jesuit colleges immediately followed suit in defunding their abortion clubs as well as gay clubs. So that was a minor, that was a relatively minor issue at that time. This is groundbreaking. And one thing, Deal, I have to say, and I'll say it here, all this time that I've worked on this, and even when I worked on it way back when in the 90s, I have to say I have always been frustrated with the timidness of Catholic faculty and scholars, because I have to ask myself, and I asked myself as I drafted this complaint, with all of the Catholic lawyers out there, with all of the Catholic professors and jurists, why has someone not done this before? At Notre Dame, at all of these other Catholic colleges, we have an entire fellowship of Catholic scholars. That's an organization that was created for these very issues. And all of those minds could not have come together to do this before. And I have to say, I'm extremely frustrated. And now, of course, I feel completely vindicated.
Well, you have been. And I'm sure that whatever is going on inside the Jesuit order now in regard to this petition is sending a signal to a lot of Catholic institutions. Aren't there approximately 300 Catholic colleges and universities in the United States?
There's 235, and many, about 10 to 15 of them are very solid, and then they vary from then on. You know, you've got some that are that are aberrational, and then there's some that are significant, like Georgetown. Georgetown, you know, I attended this last Saturday, Palm Sunday service on Saturday night at Georgetown, Georgetown's new chapel, which has been refurbished with alumni dollars and student assistance and guidance, and it is wonderful. And I saw the new relics put into the new altar. and the new Stations of the Cross, and it's a beautiful chapel. And it was a very correct celebration of, at the end of the day, what continues to be at the heart of a Catholic university. It's a chapel. But, you know, there are lots of chapels in Brooklyn, and there are lots of chapels in Charleston, South Carolina, and neither, and those places are not Catholic per se. And so we have to make sure that it is clear that a Catholic university is more than just a place where there's a chapel, that the Catholic faith lives in the classroom, that the Catholic faith is espoused in the academic traditions of theology and philosophy, as well as all of the other aspects of education, which, above all, invite an education in virtue, an education in morality, and that is what makes us different than the others.
Manny, do you think that you will get a report, or you will be kept updated on what the Vatican is doing, or how they are, you know, just what they are saying to the Jesuit order and what they are saying to Georgetown University?
You know, Deal, I don't know. It's too early. I'm now going to consult with canonists. I'm going to figure out where our next steps might be. It's very possible that we actually establish a position that we're not satisfied. It is very possible that we might say, okay, but this isn't good enough. That's possible. Or it may be that they can convey to us what the next steps are. And by the way, we haven't heard from everyone in the Vatican. We sent our petition to several locations, not just one. So we've heard from one. The first one to respond is positive. We're hoping for others. And ultimately, this is certainly not something that's going to rest.
Have you found that you've gotten much support from the Georgetown alums? You know, I know it's an anecdotal question, but how much pushback have you gotten from friends of yours from Georgetown?
Well, I certainly have gotten a lot of pushback, but from younger alumni more than older alumni. Older alumni are very supportive. And in fact, I get a lot of support from Jewish alumni that I know, from Protestant alumni that I know, Baptists and so on. Tremendous amount of support. But certainly the younger generation is either they've surrendered or they don't think it's worth a fight of this kind.
Let's talk a lot more about what differentiates the younger generation of Catholic university graduates and the older, like yourself, when we return from this message.
This is a Marriage Minute with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse.
The bishops of the Roman Catholic Church are preparing for their synod on pastoral challenges to the family. Here at the Ruth Institute, we wish to ask the synod fathers to remember the victims of the sexual revolution. We have a petition respectfully asking them to do just that. Think, for instance, of the victims of the contraceptive culture, the cohabiting woman who would like to get married but who can't get her boyfriend to commit, the heartbroken career woman who has accomplished her educational and career goals but she has no children and perhaps no husband. Contraception created these traps for women. We hope the Synod Fathers will remember the suffering of the victims of the sexual revolution. Please go to ruthinstitute.org to sign our petition to the Synod Fathers. That's ruthinstitute.org.
This has been a Marriage Minute. Go to ruthinstitute.org. Remember the victims of the sexual revolution. That's R-U-T-H, institute.org.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is made possible in part by a contribution made from our day sponsor in celebrating the 17th wedding anniversary of Rob and Tony Johnson. God's hand was at work with Rob and Tony when they met at Eastern Michigan way back in 1992. They're grateful for his blessings and for the grace he has bestowed on their love. If you have a message you want to share, be a day sponsor at 877-288-1077.
Ever thought you'd make a bundle by trading in or selling your used vehicle only to find out it's worth a dinner for two? Well, it's much more valuable to donate your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Thousands of Americans donate their vehicle each year. The donation to Ave Maria is easy, tax-deductible, and supports our efforts to evangelize. A year from now, will you remember that dinner or your gracious and selfless donation? Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
talking with Manny Miranda, who is an attorney, an expert in matters of Catholic education and Catholic identity at Catholic institutions, about his petition that was filed with the Vatican last July, and he's gotten a wonderful letter from them that they are going to pursue it internally at the present moment. He's not real sure if he'll be informed or updated on what exactly to do. But I understand, Manny, that you sent this petition to not just one institution, one department inside the Vatican, but you sent it to several, and you haven't heard back. I mean, it could be the case that one of these other departments in the Vatican will come out swinging.
That's right. It's very possible. The thing that we've never articulated is that we didn't just send one petition, we sent six. And what we did, we took the original petition that was submitted to Cardinal Wuerl, and we divided it up according to competencies or jurisdictions. And so we submitted the bigger one to the Congregation for Catholic Education, but we sent others to other dicasteries, and they might still be responding. Or they each give us the right of an appeal separately. And so that is this is all breaking new ground. No one's done anything like this before, but it's an application of strategy as well as an understanding of the law, helped, of course, by some very prominent canonists that have been helping me.
You know, I'm surprised, or maybe it has happened, that the president of Georgetown or somebody with real authority hasn't just sat down with you and Bill Blatty and tried to work this out quietly rather than let it slowly become a national story.
Yes, I'm always surprised at when that happens. I was with the president of Georgetown just on Saturday, and we shook hands, and I was with his wife. And you know, we Georgetown alumni are a big, happy family, but it is, and we break bread with each other, but it is astounding that they simply chose, because we gave them the option. We asked for a meeting early on. We asked for it once. We asked for it twice. And ultimately, they did. President DeGioia did accept a meeting, a social meeting with Bill Blatty, but Bill rejected that because it was clear that it was social and that it was not to talk about these issues. And so this proceeded. But it is always amazing to me that they simply ignore these many, many alumni who have said they will never give to Georgetown again. And are out there unhappy. It is an enormous loss of revenue. It's an amazing loss of loyalty. But they have calculated that they will find other sources of income, other sources of donations. And so they accept 30 pieces here and 30 pieces there.
Yeah, that's something that I wanted to ask you about. I mean, Georgetown, wouldn't you say that the character of Georgetown University at this moment in time is pretty much set in stone?
Well, it is what it is for this generation. The hope that one has is that, you know, I'm a big believer in the historical dialectic, that we're in a constant state of ebb and flow, that one event can impact a series of things and so on and so on. And so Georgetown is different than it was when I went there, but only slightly so. And it was different than the 60s, more significantly so, different than the 40s, more significantly so. But what it will be 20 years from now is something that we don't quite know. One of the things that will happen with regard to Georgetown and with regard to all the colleges is that technology will impact them significantly. I read an article the other day that there will be probably 11 great universities by the time everything's done because of the competition and the nature of technology. And some of these schools, like Georgetown, to the extent that they are no longer unique in any way, will have to basically become part of a conglomerate of some sort where all they will be offering is bedrooms and dorms more than more than a teaching. The irony is that that actually may be closer to the original concept of the Jesuit education, that is affiliated with a larger university and provided basically residential colleges.
Talking with Manny Miranda about the Catholic identity of Georgetown specifically, but the Catholic identity of the 230-odd Catholic colleges and universities in the United States. Do you think that Georgetown is in some way the worst offender, or is it just your alma mater and that's your concern?
You know, it is in some ways the worst offender, and it is also in some ways a premier model Catholic university. And the reason for that strange dichotomy is that it offends so often and so much that it has to then provide a whole series of counterweights for appearance's sake. So, for example, Georgetown has a Center for Religious Freedom, which is amazing and does amazing work and headed by very solid people. It has its brilliant newly rededicated chapel. It has a retreat program. It has a new retreat center. It does all kinds of work having to do with the church.
But these are all kind of outside the classroom, right?
They are. They are outside the classroom. There's no significant Catholic social thought teaching that is going on. They're trying to. They just dedicated a new center for that effort, but it's not likely to be a church-friendly outfit. The theology department is atrocious, and we think that most of the theology professors do not have the mandatum that is required to teach Catholic theology. So, yes, that's right. Inside the classroom, and even worse, inside the dorm, inside the residential life of the students, what they encounter day to day, that's where souls are being lost. And so all these other things are appealing to sort of an academic class, an elitist academic class, centers and academic programs, lecture programs that feature Georgetown as a Catholic university, all window dressing.
Window dressing is a very good way of putting it, and I know my experience at Catholic universities that were not very Catholic is that the way they mollified the disgruntled alums was to throw up like a Catholic studies program. I mean, how odd would it be to have a Catholic studies program at a Catholic university? That all these programs do, by the way, is network and connect existing classes from the same professors that are causing the problem in the first place. And so it's worse than window dressing. It's kind of like deception.
Yeah, no, it is deception. And I've been saying that Georgetown now conveys that it is a Catholic university by making sure that at every table of 10 alumni at a fundraising dinner, making sure that there's a Jesuit in a collar sitting at the table. And sometimes I know that they've actually had to bring them in from other colleges. They bring the Jesuits in from St. Joseph's University or from Fordham. Well, you know, sure enough, I've been saying this for years as a metaphor. And sure enough, the other day I was at a fundraising dinner involving the rededication of Dahlgren Chapel. And sure enough, there was a Jesuit, a wonderful Jesuit, from New York City, a Jesuit in a black collar, in Roman collar, and
let me guess, was it Father Kotersky?
No, it wasn't Father Kotersky from Fordham. This was a Jesuit from Georgetown, but he was amazing. But of course, it is a classic thing they do. They put a Jesuit at every table to give Georgetown alumni a sense that it is still a very Jesuit place. The truth is that most students graduate now without ever taking a Jesuit. And the Jesuits are live in a home which is half of it is a retirement home. So it's window dressing is what it is.
Let me ask you this question. There, you know, Notre Dame was in the news for almost a year for offering the commencement address and a special award to President Obama. And I think it did, in fact, wake up a lot of alums who had sort of brushed aside objections about Fordham's Catholic identity. Do you think there's been any substantial change at Notre Dame, or do you think it's, again, a matter of window dressing?
No, I think actually Notre Dame has slipped and become much worse under Father Jenkins. It is now the second major Catholic university, or I think the second university, period, Catholic university that now has an LGBTQ resource.
Explain to our listeners what that stands for.
So it's LGBTQ is lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and Q would stand for questioning or queer. And basically it is a center that is intended at its best to be a support place for gay students and other types of sexual identity, I don't know how to even say it, gender, you know, now I'm locking in this.
I know. It's the whole postmodern movement of judging the value of things or the meaning of things by questions of class and gender and ethnicity.
Yeah, and in this case, it's sexuality. And so, you could argue that this is a place for kids who are confused or who have chosen a particular identity, sexual identity, could go have a cup of coffee, have somebody to talk to. But, of course, that is true already at the counseling center, which all these universities have. That is true. You can do that at the campus ministry office, which all of these universities have. You can go talk to a professor. So all of these things were already there, but now what these centers really are is that they are a way for the gay agenda to infiltrate itself into every department, every program, every initiative, and now at Georgetown alumni events, there will always be a gay reception.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure.
They have a separate gay reception?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
When did that start, man?
It started as soon as you had a gay center. The LGBTQ center has been at Georgetown now for 5 years, and it prides itself, and you can go on their website, it prides itself on how they have basically impacted everything at Georgetown. Every committee has an LGBTQ representative on it, every program, and even the alumni programs. And, of course, at Georgetown, when you go to for a student tour, an incoming student tour, they will tell you that at Georgetown there is an Orthodox chaplain, of course, Catholic chaplains, there is a Jewish rabbi, there is an imam, and there's an LGBTQ center, as if it's a religion, basically, as if it's something that needs to be promoted. And as a consequence, Georgetown has become a very a gay magnet school, frankly, and also a magnet for...
When you say a gay magnet school, you mean it's actually attracting gay students?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. And attracting also gay donations. Alumni donors are, or rather, not just alumni, but Georgetown is a very has made inroads into gay donors, and that is what these institutions do. They basically will sell themselves out for the donations that they can get, and as we know, gay people in the United States are among.
Well, we know in politics they've made a lot of headway using the power of their purse.
Well, of course. Because they are among the top 1% of income earners in the United States by the nature of the fact that they don't have to worry about six children. And so there's a lot of money out there to be had.
I'm talking with Manny Miranda, who...
My point, deal is that, that Notre Dame has now, just a few months ago, also opened up an LGBTQ center. So I think it is clearly going in the wrong direction.
You know, it's funny because I talk to very Orthodox alums of Notre Dame who defend President Jenkins. I mean, how is that possible?
Because they get his personal emails and they get invited to chicken dinners and they go on the campus, and it looks just about the same. And they go down to the grotto, and they do their prayers at five, and so on and so on. You know, it is to some extent not just a matter of deception and window dressing; it's also a matter of self-deception.
Well, there's a strong sentimentality. You just don't want to see that something you love so much and have invested so much in no longer exists.
And no one has the time, like Bill Blatty, for example, has had the time. It took him, and he will tell you, it took him. He's 86, 87 years old now. It took him many, many years. He was a recipient of the gold medals that Georgetown gave. He won the John Carroll medal. He was invited into the president's office. Presidents would court him and have dinner with him for most of his life, especially after The Exorcist, and he became a wealthy man. It took him a long time to realize that he had to do something about his alma mater. And Bill will tell you that what he is doing and throwing his money to support this effort is the last great thing that he wants to do in his life.
Wow. Talking with Manny Miranda about his effort in partnership with the well-known writer, author of The Exorcist, Bill Blatty, who's also an alum of Georgetown, to get something done by the church, by who has those persons and departments within the church that can exercise authority and actually change the character of Georgetown toward a more Catholic one. Now, some of the research, Manny, that I've read of yours tells a very interesting story about just who owns Georgetown. And it hasn't there been some deception regarding who's in charge and who actually owns the university?
Sure. And this is true at many Catholic colleges. Back in the 60s, there was a trend that was started by the Jesuits and picked up by Father Hesburgh at Notre Dame, that these Catholic colleges needed to be spun off into the control of lay boards and distanced from the orders that ran them, like the Jesuits, or from the local bishop, or from the church in general. And so they started to separate themselves by first making sure that their board of directors were filled with laymen, and they started doing that. They also started to write contracts with their sponsoring orders, like the Jesuits, and this created the impression, and it was really a self-deception, that legally the university was now no longer under the control of the order that sponsored it.
And it was in the hands of lay people.
It was in the hands of lay people. And so, there's a series of legal steps that they took. But all of it was in civil law. In canon law, they didn't do what was necessary. And they never asked the church to have the permission to alienate, to transfer church property. From the church's point of view, all this property remains church property.
Now, would that stand up in a secular court?
It most certainly can. And, in fact, there has been a significant amount of litigation with regard to the Eastern Orthodox churches on this very thing. And most recently, the irony is that it has also been happening with the Episcopal Church, but in reverse. Orthodox Episcopalians are trying to retain control of their parishes, but the courts have been saying, you don't own this property. It is owned by the church. That is to say, in this case, liberal bishops of the Episcopal Church. But with regard to the Orthodox Church, cases have gone all the way to the Supreme Court. And in American law, the bishops and the church are deemed to be the owners of all ecclesiastical property. And if you, and that is true the constitutional law applying to church property, but it is also true with regard to trust law. And so what you have to establish as a lawyer is you have to say this property was church property at its beginning. And what happened to it? Well, the bishop, in this case the Archbishop of Baltimore back then, entrusted it to who? Well, entrusted it to the Society of Jesus. So the Society of Jesus now holds it for who? For the church. And what did they do? Well, they entrusted it to a lay board and a civil corporation. But for who? For the Society of Jesus. Who holds it for who? For the church. And so you established the title right to the property, and it is most clearly church property.
If there's a listener out here who's a graduate of a Catholic college, university, who is inspired, so to speak, by your story of Georgetown, and they want to try to instigate something similar at their university, what should they do first?
Well, they probably should give me a call. Not that I'm looking for work, because my wife would kill me if I engaged with other people on a project like as exhausting as this has been. But certainly it should be done in a very systematic way. And
do you mind just giving out your phone number right now?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll give out my email, which is
That would be better, I think.
Yeah, M Miranda. So it's M Miranda at att.net.
M. Miranda, one word, right?
Yes, one word, at att.net. And the thing is that this is work, but it isn't as daunting as it might seem. The University of San Diego folks, I warned them that they needed students involved. They need to do this right, you need an alliance of students, faculty, and alumni. You need someone with some money to fund the effort. And then
it's not just about having the requisite passion or the requisite anger.
That's right. That's right. It has to be tactical, strategic, thoughtful, and it is not about anger. It has to be about love. And it also has to be very carefully thought through and for a higher purpose and not for simply the venting of spleen.
Well, I'm glad to hear that President Joya, who I know a little bit, will stand with you and chat and shake your hand and, you know, be a for lack of a better word, a gentleman about the situation.
Yes, I am also glad of that. I've known Jack for many years, and Bill Blatty has been a long friend of Jack DeJoya. Jack, of course, is a peer of mine, a contemporary of mine. We knew each other when we were undergraduates. I think we were in the same class at one point. So, yes, I am glad that the what we call the Georgetown family continues. Sometimes that view of the Georgetown family isn't shared by bureaucrats and administrators who come from other places, but those of us that have a long memory of each other are a family, and we have disputes like families do. And in this case, of course, we're also part of a much greater family and a much greater purpose, and that is that is, of course, the work of Jesus Christ.
I must say, every time I talk to a Georgetown alum, I'm extremely impressed with the loyalty that they express toward their school. Why do they have so much loyalty toward the school?
Well, this may be true of many, many schools. I do think that Georgetown is a unique school. I still profess that. It is the combination. Now, some people don't know the reason why it's unique, but I believe it is unique because of the faith that is at its core, increasingly diminished, but there for many of us. It's also the consequence of that is our belief in service and social justice and its appropriate place in the world. And so it makes us people who are very service-oriented. Georgetown alumni tend to be very service-oriented, leadership-oriented, community-focused. And so that then creates a spirit that is true in who it attracts. It attracts people who want to be in Washington, who want to serve their country, who want to be community leaders and so on, foreign service and that sort of thing. So it's a combination of things. And at the end of the day, there is a very strong spirit at Georgetown. Unfortunately, the Catholic spirit is becoming more and more a Catholic ghetto at Georgetown, and that is regrettable. But Georgetown still, among its alumni, now this may be changing, Gil. This new alumni that I know are not the same as the old alumni. And they will, you ask a Georgetown student, you know, what makes Georgetown unique, and they'll tell you it's, you know, friendly people. I'm sure that's true at Colgate. In the past, when you ask Georgetown students what makes Georgetown unique, you would hear talk about faith, and you'd hear talk about social justice and service and the character of the school. Now it's friendly people. So things may change.
Well, I'm very glad that you've come on Church and Culture to tell this story. I've been talking to Manny Miranda, who is leading an effort to have the Vatican do something about the Catholic identity at Georgetown University. He's got many, many years of service to the church. Manny, thanks for that.
Thank you, Deal. And again, I hope this is helpful to all your listeners.
And give out your email one more time.
So my email is mmiranda@att.net.
Thank you, Manny. And I hope our listeners will come back for another interesting guest right after this message.
Is your child a wiggle worm? Then get ready for some homeschooling fun. On today's Homeschool Heartbeat, your host, Mike Smith, talks about teaching your kinesthetic learner.
This week, we've discussed visual and auditory learners. Today, I'd like to talk about the kinesthetic learner, the child who learns best through movement or touch. You'll recognize him because he has difficulty sitting still. And when he says, "Let me see," he really means, "Can I touch that?" Imagine how frustrating the classroom experience can be for this child. Information presented in traditional formats through workbooks or lectures just don't stick in his mind. But if he plays a game, acts a story, or uses math manipulatives, he can achieve success in learning. In planning lessons for this kinesthetic learner, you'll want to de-emphasize workbooks and lectures in favor of active learning. Get ready for some fun-filled school days. Provide your squirmy student with refrigerator magnets in the shape of numbers and letters. And if you're studying history, have him build a model ship or construct a building out of blocks. Give him plenty of opportunities to dance, exercise, and act out stories. When it's time to sit still, allow your child to sip on water or quietly work on a puzzle. Your kinesthetic learner can study for tests by jumping rope while reviewing terms. Be sure and let him take breaks throughout the school day to run errands or take the dog for a walk. Movement and hands-on activities will make learning come alive for him. And until next time, I'm Mike Smith.
Would you like some help in understanding your child's learning style? Just request your free copy of Homeschool Heartbeat's Learning Styles Resource Sheet at homeschoolheartbeat.com. That's homeschoolheartbeat.com. And if you'd like to receive Homeschool Heartbeat's daily email transcript, visit our website at homeschoolheartbeat.com.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I am Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, the scripture, liturgical prayer, and the thought of St. John Paul II all come together today on the Sunday of the ointment-bearing women and Joseph and Nicodemus.
Saturday evenings at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO, Ave Maria Radio.
This is Life News Radio. I'm Jim Anderson. The tragedy of abortion is being highlighted in celebrity news. The reason for a breakup between world champion boxer Floyd Mayweather and his fiancée was a mystery until now. Mayweather posted a picture of ultrasound images and cut right to the chase, saying, "The reason we broke up was because she got an abortion." In the death of Tanya Reeves, new documents make it easy to question if a Planned Parenthood Chicago abortionist lied to cover up her death, simply because of inconsistencies between the abortionist's testimony and the medical examiner's report and other sources. The story sadly offers gruesome new insights into the practice of abortion in the avoidable abortion death of Tanya Reeves. This is Life News Radio. The View. The accurate view of the human person changes everything. The news you hear and see pertaining to the human person has the power to inform or misinform your opinions and what you do with the gift of life and what you allow your government to do. It's why we at this station